Hey everyone, this is Steve Donahue with another episode of the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. Today's episode is episode number 29, and what we're going to talk about today is the reasons why we need to have a will and to keep it up to date. This is a fundamental part of a wealth building plan and a financial legacy plan, and so it is going to be talked about today on the show. Actually, I've got some staggering statistics just to start off with. 70% of Americans do not have a will. Many procrastinate, believing they do not have enough assets or they don't want to consider their own mortality or something like that. And so they just don't do it. They put it off. And 74% of parents with minor children don't have a will. Now, this is incredibly tragic because what's going to happen to those minor children if those parents are to pass away? The state would determine where they go. We'll talk about that in a little bit later. So for individuals that do not have a written will, in reality, they actually have a will already determined, and that is the state law. The state determines what is to happen. And of course, that's no way to leave a legacy by allowing the state to take control of your assets and your children. And so we're going to look at 12 reasons why you need to get a will and to keep it up to date. But before we do that, I want to take care of some business. First of all, make sure you're visiting us on the website. Register to be a member. You can do that on the right corner of the right column. And the top of that, you can register to be a member. Now, what registering allows you to do, of course, allows you to access all pages of the website, including our members section page, which has a couple of items on there you might be of interest. I'm going to continue to add value. I've got correspondence and communication with several different vendors who are working on developing a program for discounts for those who are members, and I'm hoping to have that up and going soon. So if you haven't registered to be a member, do so. There's no cost to it right now. Later, there may be a cost to the members page, but for now, there is not. So be sure that you sign up for that. Also, make sure that you are visiting our sponsors, and right now, the sponsor that I have, of course, I'll be getting more of these as well, but for right now, it's called 48 Days, and that's Dan Miller's organization, and he's got a book in there that I used to help build my business. When I first started going into business for myself, I went through one of his workbooks, and he has updated that book now, and it is in a new format called No More Monday. So when you go to the store there, if you want to click on that, that teaches you how to love your work and work to do something that you love, and it enables you to build a business for yourself and enjoy working for yourself in that way. So go to 48 Days, purchase that book, and that would help me out, and it would help our sponsors out. So, and then also support the show by telling others about us. You can connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. You can do that on the right column. You'll see where it says share on social media. And you can do that either by liking us or telling enough friends about us, that kind of thing. That helps spread the word, let other people know about us, get more listeners. And the more community that we have, the more listeners that we have, the more feedback we can have, the more interaction we can have, the more vendors will supply resources for us, and the better the community will be. And most importantly, the more people will be inspired and educated to build their legacy. So, and then finally, you want to give us feedback. You can do that on the left column. I set up a place there where you can contact me directly using that page or using that section in the column. You can also give feedback through the show notes. You can give feedback through steve@thelegacypodcast.com. You can give feedback through iTunes. So there's all kinds of ways. I'd love to hear from you. And you can give me the information that you want me to know about what programs you've liked, what things you don't like, what you'd like to see improved, all that kind of thing. And I've got big shoulders. If you want to tell me something that I need to improve on, that would be great, because I'm always looking to grow and improve. And anything I can do to help you grow in building your legacy, that would be great as well. So that takes care of the business for today. Let's go ahead and talk about the 12 reasons why it's important for us to have a will and to keep it up to date. So reason number one, it allows property to be transferred according to your wishes and not to the state's. I mentioned earlier that if you don't have a will, of course, the law of the state determines how your assets and how your property and how your minor children, those kinds of things, are distributed. In most states, the property of the married person with children who dies without a will, that's intestate it means, generally will be distributed one-third to the spouse and two-thirds to the children, while the property of an unmarried childless person who dies intestate generally will be distributed to his or her parents. If the parents are deceased, the property will be distributed evenly to all surviving siblings. So that's currently the way the law reads. You'll have to check your own state to determine more specifically what it is. But by having a will, you avoid those state laws because you can determine for yourself where you want your property distributed and to whom. And so that's one reason. Number two is it permits a parent instead of the government to choose a guardian for minor children or other dependents such as handicapped adult children. So if you are caring for anybody, if there are dependents in your home and you want to make sure that those dependents have the proper guardian if you're not around, then you need to set up a will because a will determines these things. Now in Virginia, I think the law says that if there is no will, the children go to the paternal grandparents if still living. And so I told this one time to some clients of mine that I was working with who didn't have a will, and I explained to them the importance of having a will, and I mentioned that, you know, in the state of Virginia, and I have to give a disclaimer here, I am not an attorney, and so what I'm telling you here is probably opinion, and you need to check with an attorney. And in fact, you know, all that I'm saying today is under that disclaimer that I am not an attorney. I do not practice law. I do not know the law. I am only getting information that I have researched. So check, of course, with an attorney on that. But disclaimer aside, now back to my story. In Virginia, if someone dies without a will, then the children go to the paternal parents. And so the paternal grandparents. So I mentioned this to some clients of mine, and when they did that, when I mentioned it to them, the wife immediately said, "Well, we're getting a will today then." Now, obviously, she did not care much for her husband's parents and did not think that they would do a good job as a guardian for the children. So another reason to set up a will, to make sure that your guardian of your children is the person that you want. Number three is it allows you to provide for differing distributions. In other words, if you were to pass away without a will, the court would determine exactly how many heirs you have, what the bloodline of those heirs is, and they would distribute it according to the already determined law. But if a person wishes to leave more to a handicapped child or to another relative rather than to the healthy, successful child, such an important distinction can only be made if there's a will. You can even eliminate someone entirely from your will. Let's suppose that you have a child who is obviously rebellious and not following the Lord, is addicted to drugs and gambling, so forth. Well, it would be foolish for you and a fool of your resources to give that in, or to allow an heir to receive those things. And so, you know, we need to know the relationship that we have with our children and with our grandchildren, whoever it might be that will be inheriting our money, and make sure that we are designating that in the will such that we are actually being a blessing with that money and not a cursing, and that we are continuing to be good stewards of the resources that God has given to us even after we pass away. And so we do that through a will. Number four is it enables the estate owner to name an executor to administer the estate, which can minimize probate and related expenses. In other words, if you do not have a will and you do not designate in the will who the executor is, then the state will, the courts will appoint an executor for the state to make sure that it properly goes through probate and all those kinds of things. And of course, that can cost a lot of money. There's a lot of resources that are tied up in such acts. And so, you know, this allows you to appoint someone you trust and know personally of your situation, someone who would be able to make the best judgments based upon their knowledge of you. It's not just some attorney in some cubicle in some firm somewhere that's determining these things, but when you have a will, you are able to determine who your executor will be. And this allows you to have more control over that and pick somebody who is able to consider your needs. It also indicates in your will that the executor is to be reimbursed and adequately compensated for doing so. Please put that in your will. If you don't have some kind of reference in there about the adequate support and reimbursement of the executor, and you appoint your best friend or you appoint your daughter or your son or something like that as the executor, you're actually causing them a great deal of heartache to go through all that, and they have to go through a lot. There was someone in my church one time who was telling me about a time when they were appointed to be their aunt's executor, and they had to spend over 100 hours and you know, multiple hundreds of dollars to properly execute the will of their own time and of their own money, because there was no provision in the will for that. And so make sure that that is in there. But you can determine that, of course, in the will. And then number five, you can minimize the cost and delay of probate. Authorizing your executor to act without the costly court supervision is important. This also includes a review of how to hold title to your property. Obviously, requiring the courts and the attorneys to approve and file everything is going to eat up the estate in a real hurry. It's not uncommon for fees associated with probate to be 2 to 5% of your estate. So let's suppose you've got $1 million estate, and that would be $20,000 to $50,000 tied up in fees associated with going through probate, attorney fees, court fees, all those kinds of things. Well, you're not going to be able to eliminate all of those, but certainly you can eliminate quite a few when you appoint somebody as an executor that you know, and then put within the will a provision saying that they are allowed to make decisions, you know, apart from the court, so they don't have to keep going to the court to verify every decision that they make. So it gives them some kind of authority over it. And by doing that, of course, you can maintain more of your estate and be a better steward of what God has entrusted you with when it comes to your estate. Number six, it can minimize estate taxes. You know, estate tax is probably one of the most evil taxes that we have in our country. You know, the wealth that has already been acquired has been taxed already. Most people that have this wealth, they've already paid taxes, whether it be through their income, then they've saved the money, and then when they distribute the money, of course, they have to pay taxes on it then, they pay tax. I mean, there's taxes at every level of this money, and then to make matters worse, when they pass away, they have to pay taxes on it again. Well, they don't, but their heirs have to pay taxes on it again through their estate. It's just ridiculous. The other reason why it's such an evil tax, this estate tax, is because the very thought that the state would have a claim on your property at your death is just crazy. Isn't it your money? Isn't it your property? Can't you do with your money what you want to do? Well, I'm getting off on a tangent here, but the estate tax is just something that I hate. And the very fact that we have it in our culture indicates that we have gone a long way from having true freedom. So anyway, you can minimize estate taxes. You know, estate tax can amount to almost half of your estate after a certain level. And of course, that level changes all the time. You need to make sure you're checking with the current laws regarding that. It just changed this last year, and it reverts back and forth, and Congress does different things with it. So make sure you're up to date on the most current laws when it comes to that. Many people feel they don't need to have a will because they think that their taxable estate does not exceed the allowed amount that is, you know, on the tax, that is required for the taxes. But this is not always the case. In fact, a lot of times people don't consider, you know, their life insurance in there. They don't consider their real estate values. They don't consider collectibles and, you know, non-tangible assets, tangible assets. All these things are added up to include your estate and, you know, the value of businesses and all these kinds of things. And so some people think they only have a $300,000, $400,000 estate, but when they add everything together, you know, it's over $1 million. And some people think they have $1 million or, you know, $1.5 million estates. When they add it all together, it's over $2 or $3 million. And so, you know, your estimates of what your estate's worth sometimes can be less than what it really is. And so you need to be aware of what your estate truly is and then make provisions for it so that you can minimize your estate taxes. And then number seven is provisions in a will can delay distribution of a minor child's share of the estate to an age deemed appropriate to you and to give the executor direction on when the child's share is to be distributed. So in other words, you can determine in your will at what age you want your children to receive their inheritance, or whoever it is you're giving it to, your grandchildren or or whatever it is. So let's say that you have several hundred thousand dollars and you have some minor kids that you want that money to go to if you were to pass away and they're still minor children. Well, they will be heirs to that money and will be able to have access to it through your guardian, you know, when they're minor. But then as soon as they turn 18, it's all theirs. So let's say that they have been able to, you know, that you've been able to acquire, you know, $500,000, and up until they reach the point of 18, they've only spent $100,000 of it through their guardian and provisions and everything. So they got $400,000 left. Well, what 18-year-old do you know of that's mature enough to receive $400,000 lump sum settlement? They're not. And so by having a will, you are able to determine and make provisions so that those children are not cursed with all that money at such a young age. And so we want to make sure that we can designate that, and we can do that, of course, through a will. Now, you know, some of the stuff I'm telling you, you can do through a will. Sometimes it is better to have it through an actual an estate plan that would include a trust and things like that. But most people can do fine with a will. It's when you start getting some, you know, regular assets and some pretty complicated stuff that you might want to go through a trust. But there are some differences. I can explain those in a later podcast. But all right, so number eight is an estate owner can be certain that gifts given to charity or bequests of money or personal property to specific individuals or charitable organizations will be carried out. In other words, a will allows the person who has passed away to leave a legacy that reflects his or her values. So a charitable bequest can leave all or a portion of all of an estate to an organization or any other charity. So let's say that you give 10%, you want to give 10% of your estate to your special missions effort or something. Maybe you've got a special area of the country that you want to, or a special area of the world that you have a heart for missions-wise, and you want to be able to give 10% of your estate to missions work in that area, and you can set up a fund for that, or you can, you know, give it specifically to a particular missions group that can do that. Well, you can spell all those things out in your will. Whereas if you die without a will, and, you know, that's always been a desire of yours, how's the state going to know that? And even if it did know that, do you think it would really follow that will? Of course not. It has to have something written indicating that that is your will. And so you have to have a will to set that up. Number nine is, if the estate includes a business, a will can authorize the executor to operate the business until the estate is settled, with no exposure to personal liability on the executor's part. So, you know, this is helpful for the executor, obviously, not having the responsibilities and liability, or not having the liability of running the business. But it's also good for the business as well. You know, if somebody is to pass, somebody passes away who is the owner-operator of that business, chances are the business is not going to run as smoothly as it did before. But by having somebody who is there to make some decisions and to slow down the process of decay or slow down the process that might deteriorate the business, they are able to preserve the value that is inherent in that business, which, you know, that's a great thing. That's a great, great profit. And, of course, that can come by having a will. Number 10 is it reduces the risk of dissension among the survivors. A clear direction from the person who's passed away can avoid family arguments over an inheritance. Have you ever heard stories about an heir arguing with another heir about the particulars of their estate, like the special jewelry for the children? I have a friend of mine who I was talking to earlier in the year who had gone through this with his family, and the father had told him growing up that, you know, when he dies, he was to receive a certain gun in the gun collection. And so, you know, he had anticipated this. He had looked forward to it. It was the special gun that he knew his father had that was going to be his. And, of course, he didn't indicate this anywhere on the paperwork, anywhere in wills or anything like that. And so, of course, upon his death, there was a great fight, a great great dispute between all of the heirs as to who was going to get this gun. And as you might imagine, it caused a great deal of dissension and hostility within the family. And of course, the person who had been promised by the father to receive the gun, he ended up not getting it. And it ended up going to a sister or something like that. And so it was just a great fiasco, and all because it was not spelled out properly in a will. So number 11 is, without a will, there may be an unnecessary burden on the survivors. At the death of the, death of the estate owner, they will have to handle the descendant's personal affairs. Without a will, this job is much more difficult. The will is an act of consideration for those who are left behind. In other words, many people do not want to prepare a will because they don't want to think about all of the questions that they have to answer in order to prepare the will. Well, if you have trouble answering those questions and asking those questions of yourself, how much harder do you think it is for your heirs to answer those questions that you don't want to answer? Of course, it's that much harder. And so, you are doing your heirs and the executor a great favor by spelling all these things out in a will, and you can do that. And it would be a blessing and make everything go smoothly for your descendants. And then finally, number 12, it allows you to establish domicile. If you move frequently or you go from place to place regularly, you own property in various places in one state or another, you may wish to firmly establish a certain place, a domicile, a permanent legal residence in a particular state to avoid the possibility of subjecting your state to multiple probate proceedings in different states. So in other words, you don't want to have to fly all over the country. If you own property in, let's say, Washington State and Colorado and North Dakota and Texas and Virginia, you don't want to have to go to each of those states and settle the probate in those states. And so you can establish a domicile in your will indicating that that is the state, your permanent resident state. And as a result of doing that, it allows you to work through that state and the courts of that state to make sure that your estate is properly executed and everything works out fine. And so it streamlines some things and allows some efficiency to it. And you can, of course, do this through the will. Number 13, we have 13 ways. 13 is allow someone to manage your affairs if you become disabled or incapacitated. And so what this does then is it allows you to help to determine beforehand what's going to happen to some of your assets if you become incapacitated. Determine who will manage your financial affairs or medical care in the event of becoming incapacitated is important because you're more likely to encounter a disability before the age of 60 than you are death. And so, that's important. Usually, along with the will, you can prepare a power of attorney and an advanced medical directive along with that, and sometimes in conjunction with it, that also helps spell out these items. And, of course, a medical power of attorney and a regular power of attorney, these are financial documents that allow someone to sign your name on financial paperwork in your behalf and or in medical paperwork in your behalf. And a advanced medical directive, of course, that is a command or it tells the healthcare professionals what your wishes are if you're not able to communicate them. So, if you recall this, the situation down in the Schiavo case down in Florida, how there was a requirement for her to, or there was argument as to whether or not to keep her alive and on the feeding tubes and all these kinds of things. And I think it was her parents wanted to keep her alive and her husband wanted to, remove all the life support systems. And so there was a great deal. Well, that would have never been an issue had she had a advanced medical directive. And so a lot of times with the will bundled in it, and the place that I recommend going to does this. They include a power of attorney and advanced medical directive along with the will. And so often you can combine the two things. So this is kind of number 13, but it's also an additional item on there from the 12. So, another thing to think about when it comes to a will is that in preparing a will, you have to ask some of the difficult questions that you need to be asking. And I know sometimes these questions are hard, Sometimes it's hard to face the reality that you will have to die. And you know, the scriptures say that it's appointed unto man to live and then to face the to die and then to face the judgment. And so, we all will have to do that. It's just a matter of time. We don't know when. And so it's important for us to be able to ask those difficult questions and work through them, even if it's a difficult thing, trying to determine where we want to be buried and how much life support we want and where we want our gun collection to go to or where we want the money to go to and how we want the assets of the house distributed, or whether we want the house sold, or we want one of our children to live in it, or, you know, particularly if you've got farms or something like that, do you want the farm split up, or do you want to go into one child? And these are all questions that you have to answer faithfully and with a lot of consideration in doing this. And so a lot of people say, well, you know what, those things are just too hard to think about. But that's not the mindset of a legacy builder. A legacy builder is going to answer the difficult questions that have to be answered and do so in a timely manner so that it would benefit generations to come and that we can truly pass on a real legacy. Now, I'm working on getting a discount to a place I recommend for getting your wills done. So stay tuned to that and be considering some of these questions. If you don't have a will now, consider these questions so that as I get that up and running, you can go to that place and get your will done and having already answered some of these background questions that you'll have to answer. And if you already have a will, then make sure that it's up to date. Go back through, look over those things that you have in there in terms of beneficiaries and assets and distributions and all these kinds of things so that you might be able to have an up-to-date will, because that's just as important. So with that, hopefully that has been helpful to you and inspirational to you. No, it's not necessarily the best topic in terms of encouragement, but it's nonetheless a very needful topic for us because we desperately need wills if we are going to be legacy builders. So if you are of the mindset of a legacy, then be sure that you have your will in place. And with that, this has been Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?